The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Now, getting old is something we do all dread in life. The Last Days of Roger Federer is a meditation on aging. The novel explores last days in a career, in life, and lastness in general. But as we come to an end, either on the sports field or in our jobs, and as our bodies decay and bits fall off, how do our memories keep on? English author of The Last Days of Roger Federer, Jeff Dyer, joins me now. Jeff, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm very good. You're a very brave man putting The Last Days of Roger Federer on the book, and there's not much tennis in it. It's a good way of hooking people in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking, actually, since Roger hasn't made an appearance at tennis tournaments recently, maybe I should have called it The Last Days of Rafael Nadal, because he is soldiering on, isn't he, in the face of all sorts of bits of his body packing up, but he's still going.
Yeah, I'm presuming you got this inspiration from examples in your own life of seeing people that you would have adored and loved and followed throughout your own existence reaching their nadir and you know, having to do something else.
Yeah, well, I think what's interesting is that athletes and artists, they follow a similar trajectory. It's just that for an athlete, typically, that trajectory is compacted into, you know, maybe 15 years, something like that. Whereas with an artist or a writer, you publish your first book, and then you can keep going into your 70s or 80s. But it's pretty unlikely that the very best work is going to come right at the end. More typically, it's going to come somewhere in the middle, I think. But the nice thing is about being a writer or artist or composer, you can keep doing it as long as, you know, yeah, you can keep doing it for as long as the brain's functioning. Whereas for an athlete, of course, to competing at a high level becomes progressively more difficult after, well, we can think of Bjorn Borg retiring when he was 26. But now with the way they look after themselves better and better conditioning and diet, all this kind of stuff. So people can keep going into their, you know, mid, late 30s, maybe even potentially into their 40s.
Where did you start with the last, like coming to an end, as you say, the careers go on for longer, but what's normal about people is they have delusions about themselves as well, that they were going to be as great as as the people that they aspire to be. And yeah, unfortunately for most of us, those delusions come crashing down a lot sooner.
Yeah, that's right. And there's that joke that John McEnroe likes to make, where he says something like, "You know, I'm not as good as I remember I used to be." And I think with writers, for example, and that, you know, obviously that's something that I'm familiar with. You can keep going, but quite often a condition of your being able to keep going is that you're oblivious to that which your readers find very, very obvious, that is to say, the decline in quality from the early work. And sometimes, you know, and it comes in, as we know, writers come in all shapes and sizes, and their careers follow different paths. But, sometimes it can happen that your best work is your early work, and even more radically than that, sometimes, I mean, we can think about Beethoven, who's late quartets, they were his last work. So late and last often go together. But then we can think of plenty of cases where people's last works come in middle age. And then in the case of, we can think of writers, weirdly, whose last book, is also their first book. There's a lot of writers who just publish one novel and then for whatever reason give up. So that's what I should stress. This is a book definitely about last things rather than lateness, which has been very extensively written about.
One of the people you've selected is Bob Dylan. Again, had Dylan died young, he would still be celebrated. But Dylan is one of these people who went on to reinvent old songs, who evolved with his career, who still today, if he brought out new music, would absolutely be swarmed upon. And his is a classic example.
So he keeps going on this sort of never-ending tour. And it's, you know, yeah, as you say, if he'd stopped, there are so many points at which Dylan could have stopped and he could still have been great. But, you know, I mean, after the motorbike crash in the, you know, in the late 60s, which brought to an end one particular phase, if he'd stopped then, yeah, his place in the history of music would be assured. But then, God, you know, then we wouldn't have had John Wesley Harding or Blood on the Tracks. And then, you know, we think, okay, we'll stop the clock there. And there's a lot of kind of incredible stuff to come later. But what I can't buy into is this idea that the last 10 years or so of Dylan's work has been great. I mean, The Voice is shot to hell. And the strange thing is that although when you see a lot of old people who continue touring, they really love it. They're really happy on the stage, and it's obvious. With Dylan, it's just this mysterious thing that, you know, any pleasure he gets from doing it is very difficult to detect. And also, I mean, I'm a real sort of author. I know how Dylan changes his songs around, but the time before last I saw him, I turned to my friend and I said, God, what song was that? I couldn't actually tell which song it was. It wasn't just that I was surprised by this being a different version of a song. I just couldn't even recognize it.
Mm. I mean, the old phrase of die young and leave a beautiful corpse, that has a romanticism to it, but it denies you the opportunity of doing great things when you're older.
Exactly. And, you know, if we go back to Beethoven or Turner, you know, two of the really crucial people in my book, you know, it's a quite widely held idea that maybe that their last work is perhaps their greatest. In Beethoven's case, I mean, you listen to this music that was made all this long time ago, and it still seems so far out, as well as being, incredibly profound. And those late Turners, those sort of pretty much abstract paintings, which are just this kind of blaze of light. Yeah, I mean, they are. I think they're the paintings that maybe hold our attention more than the stuff that people liked at the earlier stages of his career before he seemed to have gone off the rails.
I have to talk about your own tennis, because when you were correcting the proofs of this book, something cropped up. Tell us what that was.
Oh yeah, well, I'd been, you know, I love playing tennis, and my game is a right old dog's dinner, spanning several eras of technology and technique. And then I was finding that I was getting kind of tennis elbow, and it was getting worse. And I went through all sorts of all the kind of possible forms of treatment. And then back in America, where I live most of the time in Los Angeles, I'd had that thing, which is so difficult to get in England, an MRI. And, you know, the doctor showed it and said, that, you know, it's not going to get better on its own. And I tried every kind of physical therapy, alternative therapy or whatever. And he advised me to opt for surgery, which I did. And he said I'd be playing again in about 3 months. And after about 3 months, if I hadn't already had surgery, I'd have been thinking, you know, I think I probably need surgery on my elbow. Anyway, so I wrote a piece about this, undergoing this surgery. I hadn't been prepared for how traumatic surgery is, how it transforms you from being somebody with a local problem, in my case an elbow, into this kind of rather frail, vulnerable invalid. Anyway, so that's where I was. So I felt that, you know, it had turned me into an old man. But actually what it was is that the thing was that I'd been sold a rather faster recovery than was the case. But as all people in the tennis world will be happy to learn, I'm actually totally back now. It just took 5 months of really boring physical therapy to get my strength back, not three. But yeah, you can announce to the people of Ireland, I am back and able to play tennis again.
And the backhand?
Oh, that is a nasty little comment when we were having such a nice chat. Well, I mean, I said my game was a dog's dinner, but the real heart of that dog's dinnerness has been my backhand, this kind of horrible, ugly thing. You know, the single-handed backhand is aesthetically a much more pleasing thing than a double-handed backhand. But
I think my friends who I play with would actually contradict that and say that I've raised the single-handed backhand to some new level of ungainly, partly because I'm like Medvedev without the talent. You know, I'm just this long, skinny thing. So, yeah, it's a right old mess.
We were talking about etiquette earlier, tennis etiquette. That's a whole different thing. It's a whole different conversation. Jeff Dyer, it's been an absolute pleasure. The book is The Last Days of Roger Federer. It's in all good bookshops now. Thanks, Jeff.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.